This is The Pulse, stories at the heart of health, science, and innovation. I'm Mike and Scott. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Violence on city streets tends to spike during the summer. Higher temps, hotter tempers, the saying goes. In Philadelphia, trauma doctors have picked this busy season to get ready to launch what seems like a risky experiment. They are going to assign different types of medical attention to victims of gunshots and stabbings at random. Aaron Moselle reports.
On the ninth floor of Temple University Hospital, Bobby Payne lays motionless on a bed by a wide window overlooking North Philly, a once booming industrial hub that's been in decline for decades. His hospital gown peaks above a thin white blanket. There are tubes and wires everywhere. By now, Payne has been here for weeks. He's recovering from a shotgun blast to the stomach he never saw coming.
It was in the early morning. My brother-in-law had called me. I stopped at Dunkin' Donuts, got two cups of coffee, and rode to see him. No sooner as I got out the car, I heard the shot. That was the last thing I remember other than laying on the ground.
Payne is in his 60s. He's African-American, wears glasses, and sports a close-cropped black mustache with hints of gray. He was a gang leader in his younger days, but he says he's living a quieter life now. He owns a beauty salon.
I probably could have, but I'm just saying, times change. And I feel as though I should be somewhere relaxing, enjoying myself, instead of chasing money or chasing people.
Sitting beside Payne is Dr. Zoe Marr. She's in her late 30s, her light brown hair pulled back in a tight ponytail. A questionnaire rests in her lap. Marr is a trauma surgeon at Temple. She needs Payne to sign off on an upcoming study that could save lives, but also put him and his community at risk.
All right, so essentially I'm going to go through some information and then stop and ask you some specific questions to get your opinions, okay?
Payne nods yes. Marr's study is called the Philadelphia Immediate Transport and Penetrating Trauma Trial. It looks at pre-hospital care for patients like Payne, that is, people who have been shot or stabbed and are potentially bleeding to death. And the argument here is pretty simple, but also pretty counterintuitive. Marr and her colleagues hope to prove that for these patients, less medical attention on the way to the ER is better, that it will increase their chances for survival. To prove this, patients will be automatically diverted into two groups depending on what dispatch number the city's system spits out when a call comes in to paramedics, either for a gunshot or stab wound victim. Odds will get what's called advanced care on the way to the hospital. That includes procedures like placing an IV or a breathing tube. Evens will get basic care and be immediately transported to the hospital. Marr insists the study will be stopped if there's any evidence that it's harming patients in either group.
To you all why we want to do it. This is part of what's called a community consultation, which is where we're going out to members of the Philadelphia community in a number of different neighborhoods all over the city and talking to them about the study in advance of actually starting the study.
At a recent civic meeting, that wasn't quite enough to win over every member seated around a long fold-out table set up on the second floor of a recreation center. Charles Lanier has lived in North Philly for years.
And I hear what you're saying in terms of stopping early if you see that one system is better than the other. But in the interim, you're still sacrificing
somebody,
in order to prove which is better.
So, I hear what you're saying.
Yanitza Gonzalez, who works for a city councilwoman, nods from across the room.
For your study, because it almost seems like we'll be gambling with people's lives.
But Dr. Amy Goldberg, another trauma surgeon at Temple, doesn't see it as a gamble. She says research has already shown that basic care works better for these patients.
In a city where we see gun violence increasing so much, we really feel compelled to do the study and whatever obstacles are in the way for us to work through them.
As of the end of July, the city had recorded more than 700 shootings. Marr and Goldberg's study will only look at IV fluids and breathing tubes. Here's why. If you're shot or stabbed and bleeding to death, your body will instinctively try to save you by constricting blood vessels and forming clots. For those clots to stick, your body needs to keep your blood pressure a bit low. Mars says IV fluid can raise a patient's blood pressure and upend all of this. In emergency room parlance, what's known as pop the clot.
The risk is that you would raise it so high that you could actually blow open whatever's clotted and actually precipitate bleeding. Pop the clot is a real phenomenon.
Goldberg says placing a breathing tube can also be problematic. She says CPR is a better option because it keeps more blood moving from the heart to the rest of the body, a pretty useful thing if you're bleeding out.
Where the breathing tube, or giving that positive pressure ventilation, decreases the blood that leaves the heart that can go to the rest of the body, again, particularly the brain.
The study's sample size is big. Every resident in Philadelphia, all 1.5 million or so of them, is automatically a potential enrollee. But the reality is that people from poorer, more violent neighborhoods like the ones Bobby Payne and Yunita Gonzalez are from are more likely to be part of the study. You can opt out. You'll get a wristband which you'll wear for the duration of the study, which is expected to last 5 years, maybe more. If a patient's injuries have caused what's called tension pneumothorax, a dropped lung, that patient will effectively be removed from the study. They'll get advanced care regardless of whether they had an even or odd dispatch number. Also, anyone who is under 18, pregnant, or a prisoner will be excluded. On average, about 30% of patients who would qualify for this study die from their injuries. If basic care becomes the norm for paramedics in Philadelphia, Mars says the rate could get down to roughly 20%. In a city that routinely records 250-plus murders each year, we're talking about a lot of lives that could potentially be saved. Mar hopes the study's results will stoke permanent changes in pre-hospital care in Philadelphia, but also in cities across the country. It's unclear if paramedics support that. I repeatedly reached out to two of the country's major paramedics groups, as well as Local 22, the union that represents city paramedics in Philly. They all declined comment. Keep in mind, the study dictates what these trained professionals do and don't do en route to the hospital.
I'll try to swing
Goldberg and Marr hope to start enrolling patients in the fall.
I'll try to swing back by later in the week and see if they're willing to answer some of these questions, too. I'd love to hear what they think.
If you let me know when, I'll make them available.
Okay.
Back at Temple Hospital, Bobby Payne tells Zoe Marr he supports the study. If it can reduce bloodshed in the city, he's all right with it, even though he wouldn't have qualified. Cops brought Payne to the hospital.
If you cut on the news, say 6 out of 7 days, somebody in this community is getting shot or shot at or innocent person it's almost a norm.
It's part of why Payne isn't going directly back home after he's discharged.
I'm going somewhere that I feel would be more efficient for me to get myself together.
Perhaps somewhere more peaceful where he can keep surviving, living. For The Pulse, I'm Aaron Mozell.
And obviously, this story brings up a lot of ethical issues, and we wanted to talk more about those. So joining us now is regular Pulse guest and NYU medical ethicist Art Kaplan. Art, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Now, this is the age of informed consent, of patients taking an active role in decisions regarding their health care. It seems like this study shouldn't be allowed to happen almost.
Well, you know, we are huge believers in our society in informed consent. Bioethicists have fought for many, many years to make sure that people give explicit consent when research is done and that they do so in an informed way, that they understand what the research is all about, the risks and the benefits. But there are areas in medicine where it just is not possible. And this is one of them. If you have a situation where someone is shot and headed to the emergency room, we can't anticipate who that will be. We can't figure out in advance that you sign some sort of a consent form. It's not practical to do it that way, to ask 1.5 million Philadelphians to sign up in advance, so to speak. So in emergency research, whether it's gunshot, bleeding out, or swallowing a poisonous mushroom, or for that matter, having a strange overdose of a drug, and no one quite knows what the right antidote is, but maybe there's something they could try. In that sphere, we've evolved permission to do research without informed consent. It just has a lot of conditions on it.
Is there any way to study this without running this kind of research study, maybe looking back on cases and simply evaluating who did better in which situation?
Well, there is a kind of standard of care in those EMT ambulances. And whether it works is what is uncertain. And certainly the Temple doctors don't believe that we really know what's best. So if everybody got the same thing in the past, whether it was good or bad or whether less would have been better, we can't look back and do it. One other way to do this kind of study is to say we'll enroll people in it only if their next of kin or someone could be there to say yes, put them in the study, literally in the ambulance. But again, the reality of that is very few people will have that person when they get shot. Very few people would be able to make a decision under those extreme circumstances. You'd have to run the study for 25 years to get an answer. So I'm going to say, if we're going to figure out what is the best thing to do, aside from what we've done by custom, by history, by tradition, you're probably going to have to do this study.
What are some of the big issues that you see could potentially spell trouble for this study?
When we do emergency research without consent, one thing we try to do is let people in the community know this is going on. And if you don't want to do it, there are ways to opt out. We heard that you could wear an armband that basically said, look, I just want whatever the standard of care is. I don't want to find out the answer to whether that's okay or less is better. I don't want to do it. Well, it's problematic because getting a million and a half people to be aware that a study is going on about gunshots when people have busy lives and aren't paying attention, it's a tough thing to do advance notification. You do the best you can, but short of flying a blimp around Philadelphia saying, you know, citizens, there will be an experiment coming, and if you want to opt out, put on an armband, boy, that's a tough thing to do to really get advance notification successfully done.
Do the economic disparities at play here raise some questions with you? We're talking mostly about Philadelphians who live in poorer and more violent neighborhoods, let's be honest.
Yes. And so there is a big issue there. And I think it goes in a slightly different direction. If there's money to try and figure out what to do after a gunshot, shouldn't there be some money to try and figure out how to prevent that gunshot? Meaning, you want to make sure that while it's important to figure out what's best to do for people who've been injured by gun violence, we also want to make sure that research is going on to figure out what we could do to prevent gun violence, to reduce gun violence. That equally has to get our attention. I don't know the answer to the question as to whether that's so, but you don't want just people saying, well, they're all getting shot and they're poor and that's the way it is, so we've got to study where the violence is. I think there's some obligation to try and reduce the violence or at least study how to reduce it as much as there is to treat it.
Are you aware of other studies that have worked out in this fashion and that have perhaps been really helpful?
Well, people wanted to develop something called artificial blood. And there was a study where they would test that because when you're out in the world, if you have a car accident or a gunshot or some terrible thing happen and you bleed, if we don't know your blood type, then it's impossible to give you a transfusion. So people basically give, as we heard in this study, IV fluids. But if you could give people blood, that would be great. But without knowing their blood type, you don't want to cause a transfusion reaction. You don't want to kill them because you gave them the wrong blood type. Artificial blood is something that people have been trying to invent. There was a study done out in the community of artificial blood. Sadly, it just didn't work. People weren't harmed, but they didn't get benefit. But if you will, the study showed that it wasn't ready yet.
Art, as a medical ethicist, does this kind of research make you uneasy? Or do you think it's just something that has to occasionally happen?
You know, I'll answer that and say both. It does make me uneasy. We're so strong believers in our country that people should have a right to say yes and be informed, and people shouldn't do things to them or change things without their explicit consent. That principle has stood us well in getting away from earlier scandals in research like Tuskegee and Willowbrook and other terrible events that took place in the history of human experimentation. At the same time, if you go to the emergency room, if you suffer a sudden unexpected injury or poisoning, you do want somebody, I think, to try something and to come up with better therapeutic options. If we don't know what we're doing, which may be the case in the responses that we've used to gunshot wounds, or if we have nothing and we're trying to figure something out, there are instances where I think the only thing we can do is research without permission.
Art, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Art Kaplan is a medical ethicist at New York University and a regular guest on The Pulse.